Hey everyone, this is Adam Ellenboss from Nightlight Astrology. Today we are going to take a look at the synodic reset of the Sun-Jupiter conjunction, which is just about to take place this week. As the Sun conjoins Jupiter in the sign of Taurus, they officially begin a new synodic cycle. And that, for Jupiter, is considered a process or moment of death and rebirth. So we're going to talk about what that might look like today. And I'm going to use three different examples from my client practice. I'm going to show you guys a horary chart that utilized the death and rebirth symbolism of Jupiter, which I think you'll find really interesting. And it'll also be a way for me to tell you a little bit about what horary astrology is in case you've never heard of it. Our new horary program starts in June, but it's a really good explanation of the Sun-Jupiter conjunction at the same time. So kind of serves two purposes there. Then we're going to look at two different natal chart transits where the Jupiter-Sun conjunction played a really significant role in the unfolding of an event in a client's life. So I have two different natal charts from my practice that I will show you, which are really cool examples of the Jupiter-Sun conjunction as well. This should help us to, just kind of have our eyes open for what this Sun-Jupiter conjunction might look like in our own lives. And of course, yesterday we spent some time looking at horoscopes for Taurus, just brief reminders of what that whole sign house in our chart looks like, what kinds of topics are activated. So you could always listen back to that as well. Anyway, that is our agenda for today. Before we get into it, don't forget to like and subscribe. As always, you can find transcripts of any of my daily talks on the website, which is nightlightastrology.com. This week, two things. One is that the early bird sale for our new program, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic, the year one class that begins in June, that early bird payment and sale ends on the 15th. So you have just another day or two here to take advantage of that. You go to the bottom of the first year page on the courses tab of the website, which again is nightlightastrology.com. You will see that the early bird sale is up until May 15th. Of course, if you are someone who could use need-based tuition, you can utilize that all the way up until the start of the class. You apply, you tell us what price works within a sliding scale. We match you with that. That is for people who might be experiencing financial difficulty or on a fixed or limited income. So please do take advantage of that if it would help you. Otherwise, early bird sale ends on the 15th this week. The other thing that's coming up this Thursday night, I am giving a talk on Neptune's entrance into Aries. Remember that Saturn and Neptune are going to conjoin in Aries next year and will be dancing together for a little while over the next couple of years. And that is going to make for one of the biggest outer planetary conjunctions of the decade alongside of what we experienced with the Saturn-Pluto conjunction. I don't know, as soon as I say that, people are going to freak out. But I do believe this is a transit that you want to start thinking about because like Saturn-Pluto, it is a very big, significant transit, both collectively and personally, that we should begin thinking about. We're going to be looking back at the last time that Neptune was in Aries between 1861 and 1875, which coincided with the start of the Civil War in the United States. And we're going to talk about the archetype from the both personal and historical or collective standpoints in this talk. So that's Thursday night, 7 to 9 p.m. You can register under the Live Talks tab on the events page there. And if you can't make it live, we'll send you the recording link. And then you can check out the other talks I have coming up in June, July. You can go to the shop page and get any of the previous talks I've done since I began my monthly webinar series. So those are our promotions for the day. What I'm going to do now is we're going to take a look at where we are at with the Jupiter-Sun conjunction, which is, again, the reset for Jupiter's cycle, and kind of refresh ourselves on its meaning and why we're looking at this in the first place, and then we're going to get into it. So here we can see, let's speed this up a little bit. We're looking today is Tuesday, May 14th, and when we go forward, we're going to see that this reset of Sun-Jupiter happens on Saturday, May 18th. That's at the end of this week. And then as that's happening, we can see that Venus will be conjoining Uranus. Mercury will just be finishing a square to Pluto. So a lot of dynamic events in the sign of Taurus, which is why we refreshed on those horoscopes yesterday. But this moment for the Sun Jupiter constitutes the rebirthing of Jupiter in the synodic cycle. When the Sun switches sides like that and then slowly gets some distance, what you're going to see is that Jupiter starts rising as the morning star before the sun in the early hours of the morning. So that phasal change for Jupiter is really significant because it is considered to be, again, kind of a moment of death and rebirth for Jupiter. Now, for us, we have been saying that this should mostly feel like a pretty positive, healthy, healing kind of event because Jupiter is coming off from the conjunction to Uranus. It is co-present with Venus, the host of all of these planets in Taurus, which is good. You want the host of that sign in that sign. It can grant a lot more stability to the process of these aspects and the reset of Jupiter. We also have to keep in mind that we just are coming off from a new moon cycle with an exalted new moon in Taurus. So a lot of support in the sign of Taurus, and a lot of it pointing toward the reiteration of Jupiter and Uranus's conjunction, the attempt to create breakthroughs and openings and change of circumstance or consciousness with respect to all of those earthy Venusian values: peace, ease, stability, harmony, art, sensuality, luxury, enjoyment, maybe wealth to a certain extent, or material opulence. And like you can, and there's certainly shadow sides that come with the sign of the bull as well. But that's the kind of breakthrough that we see happening in the sign of Taurus. And this Jupiter Sun conjunction is about a resetting of structures and orders in our life that are behind or within the seating of that recent revolution. And we know that this is the case because Jupiter, broadly speaking, represents the orders and structures that grant a sense of coherence and rational, beautiful, sensible, logical, and flowing or harmonious existence. That's kind of Zeus Jupiter. Now, it's interesting that this is all happening as Zeus is preparing to enter Gemini, where there's a very different kind of archetype that immediately gets to work. And we've talked about that already. But when we talked about Jupiter, the archetypal Jupiter in Gemini, which you go back like last week to look at. So anyhow, but this reset moment is big with respect to all that has been taking place in Taurus, really since Jupiter entered Taurus about a year ago. So that being said, I want to give you some examples from my practice that came up last year around the time that the Sun conjoined Jupiter in Aries, the previous place that Jupiter was transiting last year. I'm going to show you one from my horary practice and two from my natal practice. And I want to use these as a way of illustrating how the reset can work in different scenarios. Remember that the best way to locate Jupiter in terms of the importance, the topics, the relevance, like where is Jupiter going to show up in my life? It's going to be according to the topics of the whole sign house in your birth chart, which is why we refreshed on those horoscopes yesterday. All right, well, three Jupiter Sun chart stories for you, starting with a horary. Now, let's just, first of all, what is horary astrology? It's one of the oldest branches of astrology: natal, electional, mundane. These are some of the first branches of astrology. And around the medieval era, and we don't know exactly where horary came from, maybe India, maybe some of the medieval astrologers, it maybe even has its roots back in the Hellenistic era. But we see this branch of astrology emerging that takes specific outcome-oriented predictive questions. For example, will I get the job? Or will, in this case, we're going to look at a chart that's asking, will my spouse lose his job? When there is a specific, targeted, focused, outcome-oriented question, we cast a chart for the moment that that question is asked to the astrologer from the location of the astrologer, and we get something like the birth chart of a question. We then utilize a series of techniques. And in horary, there are, broadly speaking, over the course of several thousand years, we have a catalog of well-known and well-established horary techniques that when you study horary, you learn and apply to these kinds of charts with these kinds of questions in order to judge, in order to judge whether the answer is yes or no. Most horary questions are not should I questions. They're not subjective questions. They're will I get the job? Will we get married? You know, it's very like outcome oriented and sort of predictively specific. And then we use these methods to judge yes or no to a chart. So if this example that I'm about to give you of a Jupiter-Sun conjunction in a horary chart that helped me come to the correct answer, if you like this kind of stuff, if this is interesting to you, then consider signing up for the horary program that starts in June, in about the middle of June. And I recommend anyone can sign up for it, but it really, you really do need a background in astrology because it's a little bit more of an advanced or intermediate type of class. So you need to know aspects, you need to know dignities, you need to have a background in traditional astrology to a certain extent, right? So it for many people, it might work to start with the year one program. And then most of our students, when they're finishing year one, will jump into horary. But if you are someone who already has a background in traditional, you're welcome to jump into the horary program in June. So anyway, let's look at this one. This question was, will my spouse lose his job? Will spouse lose job? Let's see the chart. I guess I phrased it as will spouse keep job, but it was really just the question was they were worried about the spouse losing their job. So let's see what we're looking at here. So in a horary question, I'm just going to give you some basics of the technique. We assign signifiers based on a set of methods. The first house cusp is always going to tell us which planet to assign to the person asking the question. In this case, the person asking the question is the ruler of the ascendant Mercury because Gemini is rising. So that's going to be this, this woman who is asking the question. Now her spouse is going to be Jupiter, the seventh house ruler. That's the place of the spouse. And there you can see Jupiter about is being burned up by the sun and is about to go through the synodic reset, okay? And we can see that Jupiter is hovering right on the cusp of the, depending on which way you look at it, the 12th house, or if we count in order from the spouse's house, which is the seventh, then this would be the spouse's derived sixth house, the place of misfortune. So, and then we can also see that typically speaking in horary charts, the moon will represent the flow of events or fortune, or it can be used as a co-signifier for the person asking the question. Here, the moon is sitting right on the cusp of the seventh house of marriage, and it also rules the second house, which is the place of money. And we see the fallen Mars there in the moon sign. So we know that this person is having a lot of anxiety about the spouse's loss of job because they're worried about not having money. And that was a significant part of the background of this question, but it's reiterated by the symbolism of the chart here. So the emotional concern is with the husband and money. Now what we can do here is I am going to, just for the sake of making the visual a little bit easier, Horaries will sometimes utilize the outer planet, but often it's not the world's most important part of the chart. So I'm going to take them out because they didn't play a big role in this particular question. Now, what we can see here is that the most obvious piece of evidence is that the sun is about to conjoin Jupiter. And we know that the traditional symbolism means death for Jupiter. And given that Jupiter represents the husband and that this Jupiter is sitting on the cusp of a difficult house, this probably means, yes, he's going to be one of those that are laid off because at this point he knew there were layoffs coming and that he might be one of them. And so this was a pretty strong argument right away in favor of, or in terms of like losing the job. So what I looked at here though was where do we find the actual job? And we would go to the derived 10th house from the seventh, which will be the fourth. That would be the husband's job. So you count 10 from seven. This is called derived houses. And traditional astrologers use this quite a bit. Also very well used in India and so forth. So from that standpoint, the spouse's job is going to be the derived 10th house from the 7th or the 4th, which is the sun. And so we have the job, exalted sun, about to kill Jupiter. You know, that's not a very nice way of putting it, but Jupiter is about to, the death of Jupiter is coming from the sun, which is the job. So this was a very clear and obvious testimony to the husband losing the job. And indeed, that is what happened. Now, you know, does that mean that it's the end of the world? No. In horary, one of the most important parts of the art, you might say, is how do we deliver difficult news? First of all, I'll just say this, just in case for some people that's like, whoa, that's, you know, it's a little intense. When dealing with a difficult answer, most horary astrologers have always said, deliver, you know, you sort of deliver the news like very tactfully and carefully, and so as not to scare or make someone more anxious. So one of the ways that it was really nice to use that Jupiter Sun symbolism was to say, Jupiter's going through a death and rebirth in this chart. The promise of that upcoming conjunction, which does in this case signify death on a certain level, is that there's also an opportunity for rebirth here. And so the promise of this chart is really that this is going to constitute a new beginning for your spouse. And trust that process. And we can utilize that symbolism of death and rebirth to be something that is not just about, oh, you lost your job and you're screwed and it's bad luck or something like that. So that was a case where I utilized that death and rebirth symbolism to also be constructive in terms of how we see what's happening right now. So that's an example of a Jupiter Sun conjunction from horary. All right, here is number two from my natal practice. This is from someone who became a father under the reset last spring. So I am going to pull a transit bi-wheel up on the screen here. And I thought this was really, really neat. So when I met with this individual, he was close to becoming a dad. And I noticed that the symbolism right around the time that he said his wife was due was pretty profound with respect to Jupiter. So when he came to see me, this was, you know, when he knew she was pregnant, but and knew approximate time she would deliver. And I noticed that that approximate time fell right within the Sun Jupiter synodic reset. So here, I'm going to take this label off the screen so you can see this. So here, the native has the Sun in Cancer in the fourth house. I thought this is just a spectacular piece of symbolism. Let me put the outer planets back in really quick here. All right. So, I'm going to point out a couple of things because there's actually kind of a few different fun things going on here. But when I noticed this and he was like, yeah, you know, my wife is pregnant. And I was like, okay, look at this. When she is due in early to mid-April, what's going to happen is you have Jupiter in the first house, the place of identity, squaring the Sun in the fourth house, the place of family, a sign of fathers. And what's really remarkable is that we see not only Jupiter squaring the Sun from the first house, which sort of magnifies that sense of identity, right? It's like, now I'm a dad. That's Jupiter in the first, square Sun in the fourth, as a child is being born and you're becoming a dad for the first time. What a beautiful symbol. But not only do we see that, but we see, hey, look, the Sun is conjoining Jupiter. And so there's a sense of death and rebirth that is taking place here. That this constitutes the death of your single adult, not single, your like what's the right word? Like non-parental identity. That's what I'm trying to say, right? This is like you as an independent man who's married, has a job, but has no other great responsibilities. Now you're going through a death and rebirth. You're becoming a dad. See how the structure of identity and the sense of what grants coherence to your life on the level of identity is changing. It's a changing of the guard. Sun, Jupiter, the death and rebirth in the house of identity, square the Sun in the fourth house. So we talked about this and we used it as a way of preparing for the fact that there's a lot of excitement in this transition of becoming a dad. And there's also going to be the feeling of a death. Sometimes that happens in the first couple of weeks because you're not sleeping very much or, you know, but we were able to make and like make a meaning, create a meaningful story around the symbolism in the sky at the time that his wife was due. that was a really, this was a cool transit to look at. And then the other thing I want to point out just for fun, the seventh house ruler is Venus, and who is in the fifth house of children and pregnancy. And as this was coming through last year, that transit of Jupiter to the sun, Venus, the seventh house ruler in the house of pregnancy, is receiving an opposition from Pluto in Aquarius. So your marriage is going to be completely transformed. There's a death and rebirth of your connection, of your wife, of her body, of your relationship, of the way you live together, like everything. So another really powerful symbol in the chart at the same time. And often you'll find that transits speak in several different ways at once. What's really important to note about this is that sometimes people say, you know, I'm really not seeing or noticing this big reset. But notice that in the case of the chart I just showed you, the reset was happening between Jupiter and the sun in a close square to the natal sun, while there was also a Pluto-Venus opposition going on. It is quite common for people to not notice or see or experience anything of great significance, specifically because the conjunction of Jupiter and the sun, say in this case coming up at the end of Taurus, is not aspecting anything in your chart. Look around that 28th, 29th, 27th, late degrees of fixed signs, in other words, for degrees or planets in your chart, and that's where you'll probably notice that things are going to pop with the conjunction, all the more so if there's another major transit going on somewhere else in your chart that can kind of corroborate, right? So anyway, a cool story. Number three is another example of the Jupiter Sun that came in my client practice last year. And this, again, preceded the actual conjunction by some time. But we noted that this transit would be in the air when this person was completing something of great importance. So I'm going to show you this. So this is a woman that I worked with who was on the final year of her master's degree, which typically takes people about 2 years. I think that's pretty average for master's degree, if you're going full time and everything. So what we noticed was that at the time that she would be turning in her master's thesis and getting ready to defend it and so on, it would be mid-April of 2023. And what I noticed right away was, hey, look, almost exactly on your birthday, on your solar return, by the way, you are going to have the Sun-Jupiter death and rebirth moment in the ninth house, the place of higher education. Let me highlight it right here in case you can't see it. So there's the transiting Sun-Jupiter conjunction happening almost exactly over the natal Venus-Sun conjunction in the ninth house. Also, by the way, happening with a square to the moon in the 12th. Just a little side story that I thought was neat is that one of the things that had been stressing her out was that she felt like she wasn't being, I mean, and maybe this is, you know, sort of 12th house Cancer moon pathological, but she said, like, I just don't feel like I'm a good mom because I'm so focused on school, but I also am needing to do this for myself. And so this is someone who was also feeling a certain level of tension between motherhood and school. And at the time that the reset is happening in the ninth house and she's finishing her thesis and she's about to graduate and move on from a period of time where her availability for her children and family was diminished, we see that Sun-Jupiter reset happening in the ninth house over her Sun-Venus square to her moon in the 12th. Isn't that beautiful? So this was a way for me to say, look, your schooling is going to wrap up. And there's going to be a sense of death and rebirth. Maybe some of this has been about the balance between having your own independent path, career, interest, personal development, and your emotional obligations. But finishing this is going to feel like that phase is done, and now you can start moving into the next phase of life, which quite frequently for people when Jupiter is working through the ninth and then into the 10th will be about the transition from a training or educational program or certification or something into the field. And that's exactly where she was heading next after graduation. So I thought that this was another really good example of the death and rebirth where it doesn't have to be anything awful, right? It was a perfect fitting, like symbolic expression of the Sun-Jupiter resetting around the time that she was finishing the greatest effort of her graduate program in its relation to a couple of other parts in the chart. I think that, you know, it's interesting that part of the interest in going to back to school and pursuing her own path really began when Uranus entered her 10th house. So you can kind of see that independent spirit growing as Uranus crossed Mercury and moved up to the midheaven. So there's a lot of transits that can be used in a chart like this to look at things. Another one that's here that is just kind of fun to look at is that as this woman is finishing her thesis, Pluto is also squaring Mercury in her 10th house. So you see how you have different symbols saying the same thing. We had Pluto opposing Venus in the man's chart who's becoming a father when his wife and their relationship is changing. Here we also see that we have Pluto squaring Mercury in the 10th house when this person's finishing their studies and ready to move into work. So we have multiple transits that often say the same thing. And sometimes in a chart, you will really be identifying your experience with one transit more than another, even though if you pay attention, multiple transits can be saying the same thing. And that's also one of the reasons why we sometimes miss a simple little transit like Jupiter and the Sun, which is would have been much more obvious, by the way, to ancient astrologers who didn't have the outer planets alongside, right? Because in modern astrology, we tend to lean on the outer planets and we might miss some of the traditional ways that planets had of saying something like death and rebirth. We just go to Pluto. They're both relevant and they both are often co-present at the same time. But it's fun to be just raising our awareness when it comes to things like Jupiter and the Sun. Okay, well, anyway, these examples, I hope that they are interesting. I hope you learned something from these examples. Do you like this kind of stuff? Because if you do, I highly recommend using some of the astrological transits that we are under right now to begin a study of astrology. Jupiter entering Gemini, trining Pluto in Aquarius. As we start our next round of courses, the Horary course, the Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic first year course in Hellenistic Astrology. All of our programs, by the way, although they are traditional and Hellenistic, they all include archetypal and psychological astrology. It's infused into everything I do because I'm sort of half of one and half of the other in the way that I practice. So at any rate, I hope to see some of you in the classes soon. If you stick around after I sign off right now, you can listen to me. I've tagged a video on talking about the program in depth. Remember that sale ends on the 15th. And this Thursday night, Neptune and Aries come out for the webinar and look at what is arguably the next major transit of our decade with Saturn and Neptune and Aries. All right, that is it. And we will see you again soon. Bye, everyone. Hey everyone, thanks for sticking around. I'm going to tell you a little bit about our upcoming program, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic, my year one course in ancient Hellenistic astrology that begins on June 16th. If you'd like to learn more about it, of course, you can always do some digging and looking at the course page on your own. I'll take you over there right now and walk you through it. But if you want to, you can go over yourself and look. Nightlightastrology.com is the website. Click on the courses tab and go to the first year course. This is the one that begins on June 16th, the perfect place to start for people who would like to learn more about natal astrology from the Hellenistic point of view. So this is a one-year course in Hellenistic astrology, which is the oldest form of astrology, and it is the form from which all subsequent forms of astrology come from. It shares a lot in its roots with ancient Indian astrology. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about what characterizes Hellenistic astrology, but just to familiarize you with this page. When you go to the first year course page and scroll down, you can learn more about everything that's included in the course. Some of the main features include 30 classes on the year. These classes are spread out through units of curriculum. And in between the major units of curriculum, we have breakout study sessions led by our tutoring staff. We also have an interactive group forum discussion that is staffed with tutors year-round. You always get your questions answered within 24 hours. So there's a lot of support built into the program as we work our way through the curriculum. We also have recommended reading, listening, optional quizzes, flashcards, bonus lectures, more than you could possibly read in a year, honestly. So we just have a large and long biography and sort of library of suggested bonus content that will fill in blanks and also supplement and deepen the material that we are studying. You get lifetime access to all the recordings. If you cannot attend the webinars live, they meet on the weekends. But if you can't attend them live, then you are welcome to follow along with the recordings, which are made available to you on the class website. So this class meets on Sundays from noon Central to 2 p.m. Central or 1 Eastern to 3 p.m. Eastern time. And you might translate that, I guess, if you're on the West Coast. would be what, 10 a.m. to noon Pacific time. During the program, in addition to working our way through all of the major curriculum, the major foundational elements of Hellenistic astrology, we place a strong emphasis on preparing ourselves to read charts for other people. Whether this is a hobby for you or something that you are endeavoring to practice professionally, the course is built for people who are really there for a lot of different reasons. This is your hobby. This is your passion. You hope to do this for really no one other than yourself or maybe friends or family or someone who really decides they want to start a practice. You can take this class at whatever level of interest or depth that you want because of the amount of material that we make available to you inside and outside of class. You always have access to the program too, so you can always, you know, take it at your own pace. You can attend live, follow along with the recordings, some combination of both. And then the breakout study sessions are really helpful in addition to our interactive group forum discussion. You can always ask us questions. You can email me anytime with questions. So we have a lot of support in place. Now, the curriculum, we move through the foundational elements of ancient astrology. You may look at the curriculum and say, well, I know something about these things already, but not really, unless you've studied Hellenistic astrology, because the way that ancient astrologers talked about houses, signs, planets, aspects, essential dignities, chart delineation is radically different from what most people learn when they start studying modern astrology. The reason for that is that it's only been in the past couple of decades that we have finally had access to the vast majority of ancient texts on Hellenistic astrology. We were literally missing the bulk of our ancient tradition. So the kind of rebirth or reawakening of ancient astrology is really new, which makes this very exciting because everything you've learned in modern astrology is probably coming from the lens of what is called psychological astrology, which is a way of looking at the birth chart in terms of the planet signs, houses, and the way in which they may relate to your psychological makeup or profile. In this way, birth charts are a little bit like an elaborate Myers-Briggs. So you have the personality profiling, which is the way that most people look at planets, houses, and signs. You'll notice my Mars, my Venus, and they think of them as aspects or dimensions of your character and personality. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, we utilize much of the same language, and we certainly have that approach available to us in this program because ancient astrologers also looked at the chart in terms of psychological makeup. However, one of the main distinctions between modern astrology and ancient astrology is the emphasis that ancient astrologers placed on prediction. They looked at the chart in terms of a field of karma that defines the native or the individual's fate or destiny. And so we look at houses, signs, planets, aspects as a way of understanding what patterns, themes, and topics are going to be most prevalent and at what times, because they also had a very elaborate system of timing techniques. The year one program is all about learning to read the birth chart and understanding the ancient hermetic sort of Platonic Pythagorean philosophy that was behind the establishment of all of the doctrines and teachings of astrology itself. So it's really about understanding where everything comes from. It's the why behind everything that greatly empowers people when they're learning astrology. It is not nearly the same when you just study lists of adjectives and descriptions for houses, signs, planets, aspects. We want to understand why. Why do we do these things at all? Where did it all come from? And when you understand that, then you have something like a skeleton key by means of which you can access your own creativity, your own intuition, rather than being told, just play these notes in this order and it will sound good. You're learning to improvise, which, you know, could anyone ever want to play? Why would you want to play an instrument if someone told you, well, here's how to play. Play this, play this, play that. And you never learned how to play something of your own, or you never learned how to use the scales in ways that were magical and, pertain to your own genie, your own genius. So when we study ancient astrology, one of the main things we're doing is we're taking people beyond anything that they think they've learned about houses, signs, planets, aspects, and we're teaching them where it all came from. And once you have that, then you're really cooking with fire. You have a magical, intuitive capacity that is very rare and precious in astrology. So anyway, we move through a lot of different elements, but not in the way that you've ever learned them before. And that's a really important distinction. So anyway, after all of that has been said, in each unit, we spend, maybe up to 10 hours on houses. And then we have a breakout study session. And then we have reading and bonus material. So when we talk about houses in this class, you are learning where the concept of a house ever came from in the first place, what it is, how it works, and how it's different from a sign. You're also going to unlearn and break a lot of bad habits, because not by any intentional ignorance, but modern astrology being bereft of its ancient textual tradition has been teaching a lot of things that are just not in line with where the actual theoretical foundations of astrology come from. So you're also going to break some bad habits, which is really good for people who maybe know a little bit about astrology already, but are seeking to clarify and understand theory in the context of the 2000 year history of astrology. So anyway, this class is going to prepare you to read birth charts for other people. But then by the end, one of the great things about the program is that the way we do that is not just by pumping you full of theory and history and philosophy. We are also, in the last portion of the program, inviting live clients into the class. And that's great, because when we have live clients come in, you're going to see me read from them using the theory and techniques that we've been studying. And you're going to see how they can be applied artfully, as well as, giving you some tools and methods and techniques to use to set you up for success. Seeing live astrology practice while studying it is the best way to learn. So the last portion of the program, we turn toward that hands-on approach. Anyway, so that's a bit about the program. If you have any questions you want to ask, email us info@nightlightastrology.com. We're happy to answer any questions you have whatsoever. I also want to point people to the payment options at the bottom. Early bird payment saves you $500 off. That is a great way to save. The payment plan is breaking the tuition into 12 monthly installments. If that works better for you, no worries, you can do that. And then need-based tuition. We, for many, many years now, dating back to 2010 when I started teaching astrology, I've always had some kind of sliding scale option available for people when studying astrology. Sacred science like this should be accessible to people of all different socioeconomic backgrounds. So we pride ourselves on making sure that there is tuition assistance available, so that if your budget doesn't match with the payment price that we ask for, and that's an honest assessment that we trust you to make, that you can take advantage of the tuition assistance and set your price within a sliding scale that we provide for your monthly tuition for 12 months through the program. So please feel free to apply for that if it makes sense to you. We don't want people hurting themselves or overextending themselves. A price that fits your budget is available through the need-based tuition. We just ask that you apply early, because we do fill up sometimes. So anyway, that is it. I hope that you will consider studying with us, and thanks for taking time to learn more about the program. See you later.